You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again. Sally from Finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
As I said it, I was like, the Sweet Valley would be so fun to do. And I'm like, there's two characters in Sweet Valley, Elizabeth and Jessica. Everyone else is nothing. Everyone else does not matter.
Nick Jackson and
no, it's true. Welcome to Tunnel Talk, a No Facts, All Feelings wrestling podcast. I'm Allie.
I'm Ann.
And I'm Leah.
And I'm trying to remember what we're talking about first. Okay. So, busy week in wrestling, as per usual, now that our mandated hours are up. Although, I have to admit, I did not partake of Dark and Elevator this week.
Neither did I. It was a real frantic week, so...
I did, but neither of you missed anything, so you're fine.
Perfect.
I rely on you to tell me if there's anything I need to watch. So.
I think you told us one thing that I'm glad to know, but we'll get to it later.
Yeah.
We're going to start out this week by talking about our Young Bucks, Leah's Young Bucks, and the Elite in general. So we'll start by talking about on Rampage last week. Kenny and Brandon Cutler had their almost just a doubles match, as per usual, against Frankie Kazarian and Christian Cage.
Wrestling's kind of a classic combo of tennis and musical theater. So that's kind of where we're coming from.
With a little extra pinch of physicality.
That's right.
This was kind of a goofy, funny match. We pulled a couple of recap quotes. I think I will read just because they kind of sum it up. Cutler started the match and was quickly manhandled. Kaz dominates Cutler with ease. And I would say that's pretty much what happened.
Yeah, I think that both of those quotes need to be saved for like Cutler's like story. You know what I mean?
Just like his yearbook quotes, basically.
Yeah,
it's just a fill in the blank, like a Mad Libs, like blank dominates Cutler with ease.
Marco Stunt dominates Cutler with ease.
I think
he Brandon Cutler is so tall, but Marco Stunt would definitely dominate.
Marco Stunt's energy levels are so far beyond what Brandon Cutler could ever hope to muster up.
Yeah, I will say that Cutler does a good job of sort of like hilariously put upon body language where it's like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing.
I know that we have just been calling him Cutler, but like as you said it, I recoiled. Like I was like, to call Brandon Cutler Cutler, like you like respect him in that way. Sorry, Brandon, of course I do love you. I think you're great, but it's not
Should
a respect.
Call him Brandon?
Brandon,
feels
absolutely
weirder.
Brandon. I think we usually call him Brandon. So,
do we?
Yeah. We're being possible. misled by the recaps. Anyway, Leah, speak up.
No, I was just going to say that he, like, I agree with Anne. Like, he's very good physically, which is crazy because he's a very bad actor. But somehow he does a good pratfall. He does, like, a lot of, he makes his giraffe limbs look.
When he's supposed to be doing broad comedy, he's actually very well suited to it.
Yeah.
Perhaps in part because of the size of his limbs. So the gestures all become really big.
When you think about it, it's like John Cleese also had like long arms and legs. It probably does help you as a physical, not that Brandon Cutler is on that level, but
it's in the record now. This week, Anne says Brandon Cutler is the modern answer to John Cleese.
But yeah, but when he like throws his long, giant arms, skinny arms and legs around, it's funny.
It's crazy to me that when we met Brandon Cutler, we all had to pretend that he was a dignified dragon. Do you guys remember?
Like, I thought you meant in person. And I'm like, we didn't.
We didn't and we won't.
No,
we refuse.
And we never will. Yeah, it is crazy because even when he was pretending, when he was doing his dragon gimmick, I always thought he looked like a frog when he would perch on the the ropes.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cute. It seems like he would want to be a dragon. Just like, just reaching too high, you know?
Of course we can. It's so easy to picture, especially since he and the Young Bucks have known each other since they were kids, right? Mm-hmm. It's like really easy to picture Brandon Cutler being like, guys, could we play one of my fantasy games this week? And they're just like, no, we're doing wrestling again. And the one concession is like, yeah, Brandon, you can be a dragon wrestler.
Seriously, and here it is like 30 years later, 20 years later, however long, and like Brandon Cutler is still doing wrestling. He's just gotten dragged along with them this whole way. I assume he likes it.
I think I've told this on the podcast before, but who could remember? The story about Brandon Cutler that I loved most from the Young Bucks book is that the fact that when they first started like putting on a wrestling show, Brandon was their only audience member and they charged him money.
Funny. That's like so sad.
Oh my god.
I mean, it does just fit in with his whole role mm-hmm. in this group the whole time. I think it's interesting though when you think about like having a childhood friend like that and then you're the one who's like playing it up that like no one likes you and you're kind of pathetic and you're outclassed. You know, it's just like obviously he's secure enough in it that it's not.
Yeah, and I think it's like behind the kayfabe screen, it's a pretty sweet little situation for Brandon Cutler. It seems like it makes me feel like really tender towards the Young Bucks that I'm like, oh, he's just your genuine lifelong friend, and like you still work with him, and he's this huge part of your company. It's cute, actually.
You got him an office job, so he can have health insurance. That's nice.
Well, speaking of the Young Bucks being real behind their kayfabe screen, something really staggering happened this week on BTE. Staggering isn't the word. Matt Jackson realized while they were filming BTE that his $7,000 Dior sneakers had been stolen out of his checked luggage and had to do like a little special segment on BTE where like it was just very clearly like real Matt Jackson, who was totally preoccupied by the loss of his sneakers, just explained that he knew it was stupid to check them and this has never happened to him before and he knows everyone's gonna call him stupid and he feels stupid. And I loved it. Maybe more than I loved anything else that happened in wrestling this week.
I mean, the fact that he was trying so hard to have like a nonchalant like voice, like he was trying to keep an even keel. And I could just tell that he wanted to be like, but I love them.
I know. Those were my, and he kept saying those are my favorite sneakers. He's only worn them twice. I would die for Matt Jackson.
He's worn them twice, once on BTE and once to church.
I think he said, didn't he say something like to go see Jesus?
He
too,
wore them
like,
for Jesus. He wore them said, for Jesus. I was a little bit like, I don't know. Does Jesus want you spending $7,000 on sneakers if you want to?
He didn't
bring
spend
it
the $7,000. His wife Dana did because she loves him.
Sure.
Anyway, seemingly in response, the Young Bucks didn't dress up at all for Dynamite this week. They were in just like the normalest, like black gray palette wrestling gear you've ever seen. So I think that
was so subdued. And I actually didn't have time to watch BTE until just before Dynamite. I was watching at Sarah's house. So BTE ended at like 7:50. So for me, it was like one definitely led into the other. And I was like, yes, these are their widow weeds. He's not going to be wearing any cheerful fabric until they give him back his shoes.
No, no pajama suits, no multiple prints. Just black.
It's like he's saying, like, if you stole these sneakers and you're a wrestling fan, look at what you've done. Look what you've done to me.
In the Ontario airport, you just think about it. Do you guys think, how much money do the Young Bucks have?
I don't know.
I would love to know. And the fact that Trent does know, because Nick accidentally sent him a screenshot of his bank account. Right.
I have no memory of learning about that. Wow.
Apparently,
Nick was like, yeah, I guess it was kind of, it was by accident. It was kind of a douchey move. It's like, yeah.
Apparently, Trent, Nick, and I think Luchasaurus are in a stock club where they like talk about trading stocks.
What? They have a group chat about it.
Where was this information revealed?
BTE. It was BTE.
Damn it. Damn it.
Yeah. And so Nick, like, when he was like, he was like telling them like how much he'd sold some stocks for, and he like screen capped his bank account, but it accidentally had like the total.
Well, that's kind of sweet that they're just in a dumb little stock club. I mean, I guess it's probably a lot of money for the Jacksons. I don't know why I said it. Like, I'm just like, and Nick is trading stocks for him and Matt.
The Jacksons. I mean, it wouldn't be surprising.
The Matt and Nick Jackson stock group.
Stock count.
Yeah, so the Young Bucks showed up. That was for their 8-man tag with Lucha Brothers, Jungle Express, Young Bucks, and Good Brothers. Did I get that right?
Yes.
Yeah, so this was coming out of, does anybody else want to recap what happened on this particular little plot line?
The 8-man tag, you mean?
Well, the lead up to it. I'll just explain it because I feel like I'm being teacher and I didn't mean to. I just didn't want to be talking a lot. It's just that Jungle Express fought the Lucha Brothers to figure out which of them were going to face the Bucks at All Out. And then afterwards, the Bucks attacked the winners, the Lucha Brothers, who will fight it all out. And Jungle Express defended them because they're just like good guys, even though they fought, which I do think is that I like that they're kind of developing that little thread. And then I assume that's what caused us to have this 8-man tag. I actually don't.
I think so. But it was one of those things where it's like, you saw them like defend each other. And then all of a sudden Tony was like, now they'll defend each other in a real ring.
I like that sometimes they're just like, it's not worth the time it would take to like on your screen show you how we have this fight. It's just, they're like, and there's the title card. Enjoy it.
I feel like Jungle Express is like jumping in to defend other faces, like just all over the place. And it's getting complicated out there.
Yeah. It's quite a little spider web. I think I've said this before, like that I'm not complaining about it. I actually like that things are really interconnected in there, but sometimes I do get a little bit of a headache while I'm trying to untangle like whether there's a reason that people are defending specific people or not.
Yeah. Right. Cause I get very like, wait, are they friends with them or do they just hate the elite or like the motivation sometimes.
And
bad brain can't track it.
we'll come back to that question again in a minute, actually. But first, we can just talk about the rest of the 8-man tag situation. So
you mean like when Kenny came out with blue black hair and cackling like an anime villain? Is that what we should talk about?
I think that's probably what we should talk about. Do you want to give like Kenny a hair award or something? You thought it looked good or
what is the opposite of an award?
I've tried to ask that question on this very podcast before. I guess it is, but it's like you want it to be a like least valuable player award. You know what I mean? Like,
what is our podcast version of the Razzies?
Razzies. Oh my God. It should be it is just the Razzies. That's right. Well, Kenny definitely deserves a Razzie.
I mean, I like loved it in a meta sense because it's like looks so deranged and it's so funny. But I mean, it looks terrible. It's like one of those things where it's like, Kenny, you should feel bad about this decision. But also it's kind of genius that you just keep like having your terrible facial hair that looks good. And then your terrible dyed black hair that looks bad. Love it.
Well, yeah, I don't know what's going on with I guess I kind of know what's going on. It's like Kenny is like, is moving into psychotic break territory with the way that he's presenting his character.
That's right.
Which I think is like, sometimes is working and is very funny. Like I thought this was very funny, but like the broadness with which he's now responding to Christian Cage, like he has like a Pavlovian fear of Christian Cage now. I don't like as much and or find as effective. But
yeah, I don't really get what's going on with Christian. Like I think that they could have done a thing where like Kenny was so unnerved by losing the belt that he's like doesn't really know what to do about it, but it's not, I mean, they're not quite doing that subtle. It's just like, he's like scared of Christian.
Yeah. And Kenny kind of like, I think, can't do subtle a little bit, like not, yeah. I mean, just that it's like, he really is always coming to you from like a reality half a step to the left of ours. Yeah. And I've never seen him do any kind of acting that like seemed to be playing it straight at all. So
yeah.
Wink, wink.
Yeah, and I do feel like Christian kind of still feels like a little bit of like a late addition to this. Like, I do think some of it, like Don Callis talking about how he, you know, whatever, gave Christian his first match and like the history stuff. Like, they're yeah. trying to get it to have some like emotional resonance, but it still feels kind of tacked on to me.
Yeah, and I think it's like it's okay. Like, whatever. I'm not as heated about it as I was before, maybe. And it's true that it's just like some plot lines in wrestling feel really organic, and some of them you're like, oh, I see that you need someone for Kenny to be fixated on right now. So right. now it's right. so it's Christian.
Right. Okay. You see the scaffolding a lot more.
He yeah. just like pulled up the roster and went down the list and we're like, I guess Christian. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but at the end of the Dynamite match, Kenny like I went full supervillain mode pretty much and like told Don Callis to like lower the steel cage that they're supposed to use on Sunday. So I guess Christian had come out to save someone. I don't know, but I think it was Christian and the Lucha Brothers in there and everyone else on the outside, unless Jungle Boy was in there, which I can't remember.
I think he possibly was on the outside, wasn't he?
I think he was, because at first I thought he was in there, because I feel like I was a little bit zoned out and then I was like unable to tell who was in there, but he was trying to scale the outside, I think.
Okay.
Did you guys see that tweet that was getting retweeted everywhere that was like, whenever the Young Bucks are in a cage, that's always a Christian cage?
Okay, that's a great tweet.
I love that. Oh my god, wow
Galaxy,
so Matt
brain.
Jackson was just
love
in there
it.
To show his shoes to Jesus.
in the Christian cage.
My god.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. With the faces outside the cage trying to get in and trying to like find their way yeah. in, and you just see little OC at the bottom just strolling around looking bored.
I was impressed he came out at all. I was like, look, Orange Cassidy, like, ran out here to kind of try to help. Meanwhile, Marco Stunt has, like, climbed all the way up, like, two stories in the air.
You know that scene in Zoolander where they're, like, they're trying to, like, get the files to solve their problem or whatever, yeah. and the girlfriend is like, the files are inside the computer, and they're both like, inside the computer, and then they start, like, beating it up because they don't know how to work a computer. That was a little bit the energy of the faces yeah. around that cage.
Yeah.
Which it did make me think. I was like, you guys need a thought leader, I think. Like, these leader. Characters need someone who thinks with their brain to That's overcome true. Obstacles.
Who is the brain of that group? They are all beautiful idiots.
Absolute ding-dongs. I mean, I don't think we saw yeah. a single person out there trying to get into that cage who was not a ding-dong.
It's 100% ding-dongs. Yeah.
And there was also, I mean, this is just when they all came running out, it started with Dante Martin. And I just genuinely.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, good. Dante's here.
Oh, yeah. The cavalry. Don't worry, guys.
I got Grove Garrison. Yeah. So now they're just in that cage, I guess, until further notice. And I think we all enjoyed thinking about them just having a little sleepover in there for the next
yeah,
4 days
lock,
or whatever.
A lock-in situation. Yeah. I mean, we're going to be at Rampage tomorrow, I guess, in the same place, right? So yeah. like,
and so we'll be seeing them in their cage.
In the cage. It'll just be right in the middle of the arena, and the wrestling will have to take place around the cage, I guess.
Yeah.
So.
That would be really funny if all of the fights were just next to a cage full of heels.
Just like, just
the world's worst peanut gallery.
Them. Yeah, just like Matt Jackson in his folding chair inside the cage. Making little catty comments.
Yeah. Oh my, I want stuff. To see it.
Yeah.
So this is to go back to Jurassic Express for a second. Jurassic Express also showed up in the style we were previously discussing to defend Best Friends this week. So yeah. OC fought Jack Evans on Dynamite, and one during Pitcher in Pitcher.
I was so scandalized and horrified by this, like, because, like, I, you know, they came back from Pitcher in Pitcher and I had been kind of like half watching, and then, like, Where's My Mind is playing, I'm like, wait, what happened? And he had just won. It's like, this is, what kind of planning is this?
Yeah. Voices of Wrestling tweeted and they were like, oh good, they finally had a match end during Pitcher in Pitcher so that people always have the vague idea that actually they might miss something if they yeah. turn the channel. And I was like, I don't know if that's true, but actually as I read it, I'm like, it doesn't not make sense. Like, okay.
It's diabolical if that is.
I know, I'm like,
doing.
You're right. When my fave is in Pitcher in Pitcher, because sometimes it's so small, like sometimes yeah. I just won't watch. And I'm like, I now will, I guess.
I usually try to when it is my face, but it's so small that you can't like make out what's going on very well. And like, I assume like at least nobody will be winning while the yeah. Domino's commercial is still playing. But
maybe Domino's was like, our metrics say that people are tuning out during our commercials. So they were like, okay, well, we'll just give it a bump. So people don't.
I was kind of like, did someone get hurt or something? And they had to just like finish, but it didn't look like it.
I also thought that they made the calculation with how they were doing the fucking commercials or whatever, that obviously the most important part wasn't that he won, it was that afterwards HFO right. came out and yeah. jumped him. So they clearly, to my mind, were kind of like, okay, well, whatever, it just has to happen during that.
Still bananas though, because it happened like 15 seconds before Pitcher in Pitcher came back, so it's like you couldn't just like give him an extra 30 seconds to finish off the match in the full screen.
They said no. Well, I don't know.
Attention,
I don't know
detail.
What our favorite little fools were doing, but anyway, OC did get attacked by the entire Hardy family office. It was a lot of people on stage.
Many people.
Best
too
friends.
Many.
Too many to keep track of, certainly. Best friends came out to save him, and then they got beaten up some, and then Jurassic Express came out to save them. It's kind of like sending monkeys into the crap.
The old woman who swallowed the fly.
So. Leah, you did raise the question. Maybe you can raise it yourself.
Well, I mean, I feel like we've seen this a couple times now, that like best friends will come out and rescue Jurassic Express or vice versa. But have we ever like seen them like interact in not a run-in situation? Which just makes me laugh really hard, because it's just like, do they have like a pact, you know, like they're like they're NATO countries being like, if you get attacked, you have to help me, but otherwise we've got nothing in common.
It's very weird, like, because I know they share a locker room, like, in real life, then I'm kind of like, well, they're all buds, but yeah, I don't know that we've ever seen them, like, in a promo or
well, other then it's kind of double funny, because if they share the locker room, and it's, like, best friends are on BTE a lot, so it's like, why aren't Jurassic Express are almost never on BTE?
It's true.
It's like, just yeah. do a little locker room,
Right, just some backstage stuff that your buds.
Brandon
yeah.
will not show Brandon. Us candid backstage stuff, because he knows it would make us too happy.
He's protecting the business.
Everyone refuses to on their dumb Instagram. Well, not everyone. We have our beautiful Ethan Page.
It's because Cody forebode it, because he said, I want them going to Roads to the Top to get that information. I want to be the only source of backstage footage for these people.
Of Moxley talking about how hungover he is. I am getting weirdly psyched for Roads to the Top, which is
I don't think there's anything weird about it. It's because it just doesn't have anything to do with Cody. Everything to do with what will be happening around Cody.
Around Cody, and just staring in the background.
That one clip of Mox talking really did so much work, where I was like, oh, I'm definitely gonna watch it.
Yeah, I mean, for it was sure. a well cut together little commercial for that show, because I was like, oh, John Moxley is gonna be here out of character,
appealing to a variety of people, many right. of whom might not usually be attracted to the material.
That's correct.
Anyway, so Jurassic Express and Best Friends are gonna fight someone from HFO as the buy-in for the PPV on Sunday, which is very exciting.
Very exciting.
I believe
we were
the backstory.
Pretty bummed we weren't going to see them at all out. So this was a big get for us.
Do you know who they're fighting? Does anyone have that information?
Specifically? Various HFO members.
I think it's Yuta, Chuck, and Orange. And so, yeah. And it's, but I don't know who from Jurassic Express.
I thought it was with Jurassic Express. It is, right?
Oh, it is, but I just don't know if it's all three of them or if it's just...
I thought it was a 5-on-5 for some reason.
Marco always gets left out.
I know. Marco.
We're bloody. There's one time on BTE when because he has the BTE belt now, and they were like, Marco, where have you been? And he said in kind of like a, he was like, I haven't been booked, man. Like in a like awkward little tone. I was like, oh, Marco,
I want you buddy, to be booked.
It's Orange Cassidy, Chuck Taylor, Wheeler Yuta, and it just says and Jurassic Express, but it shows Luchasaurus and JB, and then it's Matt Hardy, Private Party, and TH2.
Okay. Great. Yeah, fine. Sure. I can't wait to see it. I bet it'll be kind of like a loud goofy, so that sounds fine.
I can't even be mad about the Matt Hardy of it all, because I thought that he wasn't going to be on... weren't going to be on the pay-per-view at all.
If so, it's like, nothing just, or like, them with Matt Hardy, it's like, I'll take them with Matt Hardy. I'm very excited for it, actually. Absolutely. So, yeah.
I actually love Matt Hardy. Actually, I've always said it.
The best thing that could have happened to me.
I believe what happened with this situation is the Women's Casino Royale was going to be the buy-in, but Andrade and Pac are having some kind of travel issues, purportedly. I don't know if that's real or not. So the Women's Casino Royale got bumped into the PPV, and then this match is taking the place.
Apparently, Meltzer said this morning that he heard that Pac might have COVID, which, who knows, but...
Well, if so, it's good that he's not coming.
Yeah.
That's great. True, to infect all the wrestlers and us also.
Great. Stay away.
I am psyched for the Women's Casino Royale or Battle Royale to get in the pay-per-view. And my friend Jeff has been telling me that there's all these rumors that this wrestler Ruby Soho is going to be like the surprise appearance. And she's the one that
best friends in them know, I believe. It might be a Chikara thing. And she just came out with like a trailer for her new, you know, persona or whatever, which I watched some of. And it seemed good.
Jeff sent me those and I haven't gotten a chance to watch them yet, but I am excited for it. And apparently John Silver was wearing a t-shirt that referenced her like on BTE or something. So the t-shirt references to people who are coming are continuing, which I love.
My God. Well, I guess it's, I do actually kind of appreciate that it's like they love doing these actually fairly unobtrusive things that if you're a mega freak, you understand. And the rest of us can just cheerfully not notice.
Just blows right past us. And then someone tells us and we're like, oh, that's cool.
That's fun.
Great.
Okay.
I did even get more excited about the Battle Royale when Anna Jay came back. I forgot I missed you so much.
I know. That was very sweet. Very
exciting. It was great. And Ty Conti looked like real emotional hugging her and stuff.
She looked like she was about to cry.
I know. Yeah. It was great.
Yeah. And she was fun in that match. Every time I see Ty Conti wrestle, I remember again that I'm like, you're fucking great. You're just a great wrestler. And you're just so high energy that like it's just so easy to watch.
Yeah.
Okay, speaking of easy to watch, we saw CM Punk again, and he is very good at working the crowd. So he showed up on Dynamite to just walk around for a long time while they were applauding him again, looking delighted. Which I definitely get.
I was making some cracks about how he just gets to be a motivational speaker for like so many episodes before he actually wrestles. And then you were like, well, Sting also did that just without the speaking. And I was like, well, that's true. Now that you mentioned it. Everybody just gets to walk out here and display their visage to us for several times.
I think it's like when they have natural charisma, it's great. Like that's why it was, I mean, I know that Christian is Captain Charisma, but when he kept showing up, not really doing that much, just having these polite conversations, it was like, you're not captivating me. But Sting and CM Punk both, like, you just your eye is immediately drawn to them and you're like, what is going on with that guy?
And so, CM Punk, honestly, like, he can like work a crowd well, because he keeps saying things that I'm like, oh, like, I love that. Like this time I was like, again, making a crack about him not doing anything. And he was like, I'm not good. And then he just started saying that he wasn't doing anything and you're going to get sick of it, but he's not. And I was like, oh, you're talking right to me, buddy.
Well, he did end up doing something. So, and that something was got beaten up by 2.0 and their canonical son, Daniel Garcia.
Which another twosome that showed up and were very charismatic, as this entire podcast agrees.
We all agree, of course. Well, they were so fun. I can't believe you didn't find the non-broad-faced one funny in that promo where it's like, what did they say? It was that he was just like, oh, just where he was like repeating the other guy.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. He was just fully being like an echo. Yeah, like the world's best hype man.
I know. Anyway, so they came out and beat up CM Punk for a while, and then now this is where it gets really funny. Darby and Sting showed up to defend CM Punk.
Even pretty intense when they're fighting next time. This is another like Jurassic Express thing where you're like, you guys are fighting, but you respect each other, I guess.
Yeah. Well, this is much more, I mean, JB could never hope to bring the level of intensity that CM Punk and Darby brought to this interaction. And in fact, it would be so funny to watch JB try to do, like, we're fighting, but I respect you, kissing pose at somebody, because I don't think he's capable of it at this stage in his career.
I would love to watch CM Punk, like, forcibly kissing pose him just to see how uncomfortable he got, how quickly.
Well, maybe that's how he's, if I were him, this is how I'd be choosing opponents, is I'd be like, Tony, line up the men in one of the long hallways of Daly's Place. I'm going down the line. I'm doing kissing pose with everybody. Whoever I'm getting the best energy out of is going on my, you know, yearly, my roster. Like, I'll be fighting them.
Wow. I'm believing that as what happened, because the energy Darby was bringing was top notch. Jungle Boy would just like look zoned out and kind of bored, I think, which would
look like worried.
Insane.
Like he's just like, yeah. Am I doing it right?
You've got your forehead pressed against mine.
I know. That's actually my personal space.
And then he'd like try to awkwardly touch his shoulder, but the angle would be weird. Yeah.
I know. He's like, I didn't learn when they're that close. I didn't learn how to do that.
I haven't practiced.
So
it was great. Darby's such a great choice for like CM Punk's first little showdown, and like the energy between the two of them was just like off the charts. Like, could not be better.
I mean, they both are like pretty good at doing. I don't want to say they're good actors. That's not really what I mean, but they're good at doing like a kind of like evocative but slightly unclear facial thing where it's like, I feel really intensely. It's not good or bad. It's in the middle. Like, it's right. A variety of complex emotions, but I'm feeling them deeply. Like, they both really nail that.
I think it is the complexity, because some, like Jungle Boy, can project one thing, confusion, at all times, but they've got a lot going on under there. Me mad.
So that was pretty affecting. Say.
Yeah,
and
we
then
pretty into that, and then Sting gave a real goofy little speech, I think, but I liked it.
I was cackling. I laughed from the beginning to the end, and then I just kept repeating to Sarah whenever there was a commercial break, mucho respect, man.
Well, Sting did bring this great, like, it really does feel like he's like, I'm collecting all the angriest little wrestlers in the world, and I'm bringing them to my school, and I'm teaching them to respect each other and to fight each other as men.
He really gave them both a little pep talk before this match, which was very, like, a very funny energy when he's, like, allied with Darby, who's fighting CM Punk. He's like, boys, let's have a good match out there.
It is, like, a little, like, he's just like, I know that this would be a good friend with Darby if you just let him in.
Right. I see a great future for you, too.
And then later in that same show, they aired a promo that Darby cut on CM Punk, which was, I think it really read like a rom-com trailer. Like, I don't know why they chose the music.
Like, the rest of it was normal, but the musical choice was completely deranged. It was like the plunkiest guitar. Like, it belonged on Gilmore Girls. It was just
It actually was a little bit like someone went to export the file and like switched something at the last minute accidentally, and maybe didn't realize until it aired. And everyone was like, "Whoa, they gonna."
Are they about to meet cute at the bakery that Darby owns? Because that's what this is bringing for me.
Oh my god.
Yeah, but like CM Punk said that Darby, if CM Punk was 15, Darby would be his favorite wrestler. And then Darby was like, when I was 15, CM Punk was my favorite wrestler. It was like, you guys, this is a lot of
energy.
Weird energy.
Okay.
It's great, I guess.
And then what?
And then what? Yeah, seriously. Do you have a poster of him on your wall? Or you could elaborate a little.
Oh, my God. Well, I can't wait to watch that match. As I keep saying, my pussy will pop.
Live and in person. We'll
I am
be sitting right next to you.
Pretty thrilled. So let's move on to pussy non-unpopped.
D Depop.
Depop the pussy. And we did also watch what I believe you, Anne, called A Match for Men. Might have been later. I don't know who said it. Which was FTR versus Proud and Powerful. So we'll start with a brief fact check that we got. Apparently, the FTR guys in real life are really nice, which doesn't surprise me. It's just that they made up really boring characters that they play. So, right. Cool.
Our
so
friend Caroline was like,
their jobs.
They're really goofy in real life. And I'm like, how is there absolutely no sign of that in how they do wrestling?
It's fully insane. They're like in professional mode where things are not going to be fun in this entertainment show.
But I guess that, I mean, it's like kind of, I don't know. They're playing to a certain crowd, obviously. Some people really like them. So.
They are.
And I'm... Yeah, well, anyway, men. So Cash Wheeler is the one who got cut up, right?
Yeah, he got, like, wrist, like, pinched on the
The hooks ring. Were the, oh, yeah, wrong gotcha, way gotcha, around gotcha. And went right into his arm, I guess. Yoy.
That's right. Bad.
And he has and permanent nerve damage now.
Right. But, allegedly. I mean,
or does well, he? No, I mean, so, you just don't know.
You just
but
don't
that
know.
Also, it means a lot of things. Like, my friend Liz cut herself trying to open an avocado, and she had to get stitches, and they told her that she had nerve damage. It just meant that, like, when she touched that part of her finger, it was, like, numb. I mean, you're not using the inside of your wrist that much. You're fine.
It's true. I also have permanent nerve damage on my leg from an accident I was in Canada. And it's a pretty big patch, and it's like you don't really notice it that much. So
you said
actually,
in Canada with the most like derisive, like friggin' Canada did this to me.
Oh no! I think it's like I always think about it's the when you if you die in Canada, you die in real life, and like in a way where I'm like it's so crazy to me that I just went on vacation to Montreal and then was in a huge
Canada
crazy accident
sense.
That was life threatening to some of my friends. So I'm like, that doesn't make sense. That's, but anyway, don't know what I was talking about. Oh,
Cash
Proud
Wheeler
and Powerful.
And
oh,
Proud
Cash
and Powerful.
Wheeler. Yeah. That was my question was, to what degree, like it, as always in wrestling where it's like, to what degree is it real? Or it's like a version of real and they're playing it up for the narrative right. And they are building a narrative around it or they built one.
Well, so. I didn't expect him to be in this match because I had heard he was like pretty seriously injured. So then I was watching, I came in late, like I was on the phone. And so I started like 5 minutes late and I was like, oh, it's like Proud and Powerful and the uninjured member of FTR. And I guess he's got like a different friend to wrestle with him. And I didn't realize it was the same member of FTR until basically the end of the match.
Cash Wheeler is his own body double.
Could have been replaced. I'd never know.
Well, I do think that I don't think any of us watched this match very closely.
No.
Confirm or deny.
Well, I just told you about my.
Well, yeah, I know your story.
Yeah. I did like their retro rainbow panties that they were wearing.
Yeah.
That was the only good part.
The fashion was good.
Yeah.
Anyone? Anything else? We're moving on.
I do
care.
Like Santana and Ortiz. I feel like they are not being given good opportunities to shine with these people they keep getting paired with.
Oh my god! I didn't even on our notes. I didn't even say the right faction that they're a part of.
I just saw that and was like, yeah, all terrible factions. Ollie had written in our schedule, Santana and Ortiz won. I'm sorry, but until they're free of the factory, how can I care?
I meant the pinnacle. The pinnacle.
No, inner circle.
I know what faction. Oh, shit, they are the I only had two choices. I had a 50% chance. I mean, I agree. I like them, but I won't be really liking them until they're not in this fucking faction anymore. So let's move it along, Jericho. Oh, I should have done a transition there. Well, okay, we'll do it. Okay, well, we'll talk about Jericho first. So Jericho also did a promo on Dynamite this week, and he either is or isn't going to retire. So that was a major takeaway. I think that one of you said that you did like this.
Oh, just that. I mean, I I like the promo entirely for Tony Schiavone. Like, that was the only reason to watch it. Him and MJF. Yeah, that was it.
No, I actually kind of like the Jericho promo just because, like, I do feel like he's, like, better at talking than I kind of think of him as. So he did kind of get me drawn in. I wasn't watching it, like, super closely, but I was, like, considering how sick of Jericho and MJF fighting I am, like, he did manage to draw me in a little bit. And I was like, oh, yeah, this is always better when it's, like, just the two of them and not, like, 20 other men that all have to talk the same amount. So.
Yeah, and he's better when he's doing, like, more conversational promos. Because it's like he does have a really good energy with the audience, but then MJF does theater promos. And so Jericho will kind of, like, meet him at the theater promo level, I think, sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, it's not as natural a fit for you, even though I understand that you are a theater boy in your heart and you love it and you want it. And I would love for you to do another song, but just the energy is a little better when you bring it down a little.
Yeah.
It was really funny. I think, like, some not that credible news source, I think, recently was like, JR is going to stop announcing for Dynamite and he's going to start to, like, ramp back his work with AEW or something. And JR retweeted it and was like, that's the first time I'm hearing about it. but then when he came out, the way he set up that interview with Jericho was so weird to me that I was like, oh my God, maybe JR is about to retire on stage right now. I don't know. And then I couldn't stop thinking about it for the rest of the promo.
JR always does kind of have a slightly weird energy when he's, like, interviewing someone one-on-one, you know? Yeah, it's like, does. I don't know what the energy is, but it's very, it's like, sort of checked out. It's like he doesn't want to be there. I don't know.
It's sick that he gets, like, usually he's just such a ding-dong. I say really lovingly, now I love JR, but usually he's just, like, such a, you know, he's like, you're like, wow, he's coming to us from another time and place. but then, like, it's like he gets kind of a wistful little energy when he's, like, live in person with someone. There's a pathos that starts to come out where I'm like, oh, God, it's JR, true. This could be the last thing you ever say. You could die at any second.
Maybe it is just looking at him more. Could be the last thing you ever say.
Does it? When I when you think about JR's face, is it, like, really easy for you to imagine him as a dog version of himself in the dogs playing poker painting?
Yeah.
Because my brain went so fast.
Now that you mention it, yeah. That's the energy that's he has. Yeah.
That's absolutely correct.
Man, I would love a version of the dogs playing poker painting where every poker player is, like, a wrestler that's been turned into a dog.
I feel like you could do it real well with many of them.
Oh yeah. I'll put this on the list as a future activity. We'll come up with which kinds of dogs they are.
Good.
I'm a real cruise director now. Okay, let's talk about Miro the Redeemer. So we saw him on Rampage again. He hauled Fuego del Sol out and kind of pushed him around and was like, you didn't win a match, so you shouldn't have gotten a contract, which is like, well, I liked the angle where I'm like, you're right. Mm-hmm. And we wanted him to get the contract. So it's great that he did. And now he's in trouble, which is also great. And Miro went Ultimo heel and pulled his mask off. And he must have said, like, come to me, Eddie Kingston. I'm a vampire. Come to me, Eddie Kingston. He summoned Eddie somehow.
Eddie can just sense when Fuego de Sol is having to grovel at Miro's feet. Like, just writhe on the floor in front of its boots. And he's like, this isn't right.
That's Fuego del Sol specific, you would say, for Eddie?
I think Eddie would sense it if anyone was being forced to grovel at Miro's feet. I think Eddie would be there for them.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see how things go with Fuego. Maybe it is special, but
I do think Eddie might be, to answer your earlier question, the only face with a brain cell in his head.
Oh my God, you're right.
If Eddie had been storming that cage, like, things would have gone better.
He would have been like, guys, this guy's got the key. Guys,
the unionization of the faces cannot truly take off until Eddie Kingston gets involved.
Yeah. Eddie's clearly the head of the union, very clearly. Yeah.
That's correct.
It is great to imagine a scenario where it's like the faces are like trying to unionize and not doing a good job for like a full year. And then Eddie Kingston just interrupts a meeting and is like, okay, well, I can get this done in 2 days.
Then they have a union. Yeah. I'm very excited for this Eddie Miro match. I think it's going to be so good.
His, his energy in Rampage got me so excited because he came out and he was grabbed the mic and he looked at Miro and he took a breath like he was about to say something and then he was just like, nah, fuck it, and threw the mic, booked it into the ring and kicked Miro's ass. It was amazing. I like the moment he did that, I was like, I'm so hyped for this. I cannot stand myself.
Yeah, and they really built on that energy. They had a promo on Dynamite. They both are actually just fucking great at promos. So they were some of the most quotable lines that I've heard in recent memory.
They really were.
Just great stuff.
Yeah, they're going to walk through hell together, and then Miro can go to his God's heaven.
Maybe Miro can go to his God's heaven. Miro explained that he goes down on his wife, which I love.
Cunnilingus.
He's talking about his wife so much. Like, she's she going to show up or what?
Yeah. She's definitely going to show up at All Out. There's no way.
You think at All Out?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my. Oh, yeah. I think she's
Okay. All right.
This is just a theory. I don't know shit, but I'm like,
well, I was wondering if I was like, are you getting this from your like everyone on Reddit is saying she's going to show up at All Out or something?
Did Sarah send this to you in a wrestling recap email first thing in the morning?
What info do you have that I don't? Everyone usually has some info that I don't.
No, I don't think anybody has an idea. I just think she's going to come out.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think he's really building her up quite a bit. So yeah, I'll be interested in that and whether she does an accent. And then Leah, you said that Eddie is a permanent fixture on Elevation commentary now.
That did come from Sarah, which
that's awesome.
You guys are, well, Allie already has met Sarah, but you guys are going to spend the weekend with Sarah, and so she's going to say all of her facts that she knows in front of you, and then you guys are going to know as much as I know, which is terrible. I really enjoy knowing things.
I like that you think all these facts are going to go in my brain and then they're going to stay there.
I bet it's kind of like a couple of them will stick, you know, but some of them will cruise into outer space.
They'll just go right through front to back.
Yeah, but apparently I don't know. I don't know if she got it from Eddie directly, but she texted and was like, Eddie's permanent on Elevation.
From
like,
Eddie directly? It sounds like she has his phone number.
They text.
Excuse me?
Absolutely. No, but I'm very happy because they needed him. They needed a little bit of
stuff. Well, we were saying since the start that they needed someone zesty to get Paul and Tony's energy up. And
yeah.
That's perfect.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Okay, so now we have a very special segment. I'm calling this AEW Super Special Number One.
Nice.
I teased it last week. We are casting the wrestlers as members of the Babysitters Club. So we're going to get a full roster for the old BSC. You guys have both brought some suggestions, I believe. Mm-hmm. So
I did my homework. So
a really nervous look from one of my students.
I didn't know that we were supposed to cast all of them. I just have some ideas for each one. So I think that Anne is going to be the primary.
Anne will take lead and we will run commentary. So I'm going to go through them one by one. I'll read the name. Hit me with the casting. So we start with the leader, Christy Thomas.
So I had a few options for this one. And the one I'm kind of leaning towards, which I know is deranged, and I'll say why when I say that. I think maybe Matt Jackson, even though I know Matt Jackson is way more feminine than Christy Thomas. But if anyone's going to have a big idea to start the Babysitters Club and rule with an iron fist, it's Matt Jackson.
I will say I also thought Matt Jackson and then was like, I don't think that's right. But it's true that Matt Jackson would want to rule the roost. Mm-hmm. But I don't have a... Leah, do you have a suggestion?
I like the idea of it being somebody, one of the EVPs. I think But I was thinking Jericho. Like, Jericho's a Christy.
Jericho?
That's disgusting. I don't like that at all.
Leah, I'm really worried about how you did on this assignment.
Allie's like writing an F on the top of your paper in red ink. And Jericho.
Ladies, here's what I think Fuego del Sol's Tumblr is going to be like.
Oh my God. I don't think that's right.
Yeah, I don't think that's right at all. My runners up were Eddie Kingston or MJF potentially as the big bosses.
MJF maybe. Did you have a woman?
Let me scroll down to my women's roster. Britt Baker.
Britt Baker.
I was leaning on the bossy part. More than the sports.
I think Britt Baker is maybe Stacy, but okay. Well, guys, you know, write in. You let us
what
know.
What was your answer, Allie?
I didn't have an answer. This wasn't my homework. I gave it to you guys.
Oh, I see.
Well, we heard a critique. We can't all have, I literally assigned it to you two as homework.
Okay.
Okay, Karen Brewer.
I didn't do this one. I did the Babysitter's Club because you added Karen. These 30 minutes before the podcast. So.
Okay. Right. Leah, did you cast Karen or Bart?
Well, now I'm afraid to say anything because then I think get yelled at.
If I go with Matt Jackson for Christy, I think Nick Jackson is Karen.
Okay, well, I reject that.
I like how Allie's like, I'm not going to offer my own opinion, but I am going to keep
I think that in that pairing, it actually would be that Nick Jackson is Christy and Matt Jackson is Karen. Because Karen is much more insane than Christy. But again, I'm not advocating for that. Karen is an absolute lunatic.
I mean, she's a lunatic, but you can't, like, Nick is the one who's running his own small business, and Matt is a six-year-old who's just obsessed with the woman next door.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It doesn't really work, but.
I think this segment is going great.
Oh, yeah.
Leah, come on.
Who is your.
John Silver.
John Silver. Oh, for Karen? Karen. I like that, actually.
That's good, actually.
That's good. Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm very on board with that.
That's right, because John Silver would become convinced that the woman who lives next door is a witch and then be persecuting her, basically. And then did you cast a Bart for Chris Jericho? No? Okay. I also don't have a Bart. Okay, Claudia Kishi.
I think Darby Allin.
Yeah.
Art school boy.
It's cool, Darby?
Yeah.
He's the little art boy.
His little art boy. He would be a much moodier Claudia. He would be bringing a really different energy.
Mm-hmm. It's true. But I could see him hiding candy all over his room. I think.
You made kind of a skeptical face at yourself.
I was like, can I? I can. Malachi Black would be another option for Claudia also, but two even farther down the moody spectrum there, but...
Malachi Black would not be able to handle most of Claudia's storylines. Claudia, he also really seems like he likes doing his homework a lot, and Claudia is like a real space cadet and like is not getting good grades. And
Claudia Kishi could be a Celtic god wrestler, but Malachi Black could
that's true. Claudia Sony could Brooke. Handle his stuff, but he couldn't handle hers. I mean, that's correct. It's just correct.
Okay. Marianne.
Brandon Cutler.
I understand the reasoning. I understand. I'm getting a sense of your structure.
Yeah. Well, and I also thought you could do like a full elite one. I wasn't doing this, but you could do Matt Jackson as Christy, Brandon Cutler as Marianne, Kenny Omega as Claudia, and then Cody as Stacy.
Oh, Kenny Omega as Claudia is actually really good, I think.
It's, deranged in a specific way, I think.
Yeah. Having the phone in the room and being like the one that is like...
Oh, the, like, organizer one, kind of. She's not really the organizer, but yeah, having the phone.
Yeah. Having the phone. Seems like someone who could have a phone.
He seems like he has a lot of resources.
Okay, Leah, who did you have for Marianne?
Hangman.
Hangman? Oh, I like that. I can see that, actually.
Yay.
So you see Hangman as kind of shy and bookish?
Yeah, a little bit. That's my sweet boy.
His dad's too strict with him.
Yeah. That's right. He's been sheltered and sometimes his friend
has an
Christy,
alcohol problem.
Matt Jackson pushes him a little too far. That's adding up. Okay. Did you give Hangman a boyfriend, a Logan Bruno?
Well, I'm not confident on this because I had to read the Wikipedia for Logan Bruno about a half an hour, but I picked Lee Johnson.
Huh. I think that is fine in that it's like kind of just a generic man.
Yeah.
he possibly the most generic man on the roster, as you mentioned it.
Producer Marjorie does suggest that Hangman could potentially be Logan, which is true, because Hangman would be like a really sweet boyfriend. Yeah. I don't know who his
little bit of a southern accent.
He was like, yeah. No. Well,
Logan Bruno was from Louisville, Kentucky, just like yours truly, so pretty exciting.
I have like brain poisoning from a Babysitter's Club podcast that I listened to for a long time, which I love, where they were like spinning like this like version of what was the Babysitter's Club books were all about. And there were a lot of different factors, but Logan Bruno was nicknamed the Great Deceiver. And then every time he came up, they would call him a snake in the grass. He's really nice in the books, but to me, I'm like, and Logan Bruno is actually an incarnation of Satan on Earth who's bringing about the end of all things in the Babysitter's Club universe. Okay, Stacey McGill.
That's who I had as Matt Jackson.
I had Ricky Starks.
Oh, interesting.
Ricky's pretty good.
Ricky's good. I think actually both of those are very good because Matt Jackson... Like easily, if Matt Jackson is Stacy, then Nick is Dawn, probably. And
yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but that is Matt Jackson is he's from the city. He's from the city. Where are they from?
New York.
No.
Well, they're from Stanford, Connecticut. They're from Stony Brook, Connecticut.
Matt Jackson.
Oh, Rancho Cucamonga.
Yeah, I was trying to remember for the joke.
I got there.
Who did you have? Oh no, you just said it's okay. I think those are both really good. Ricky Starks. Okay, Dawn Schaefer.
I'm leaning on the health food person aspect of it. Again, I'm not actually a Babysitter's Club person, so this is really hard.
Oh wow. So I was like, you're doing great.
Matt Seidel.
I did think Matt Seidel for the like vegan type person. I kind of leaned on like blonde and self-righteous for mine. So Christian Cage potentially.
That's a good one too.
Or Cody Rhodes, you know.
Oh my God. That's being too mean to Dawn, I think.
It is mean to Dawn, who was my really favorite, far. Honestly, even though I feel like everyone hates her. But as a child, I was like,
she was really my
favorite too.
I think that Matt Seidel kind of makes sense to me because it's just that spacey, like, those California vibes, baby.
Varsity Blondes a little bit.
Yeah. I know. Jesse Ramsey. The Varsity Blondes are ending up in the Sweet Valley casting.
Yeah, Jesse was a tough one because she's just, like, the least deranged of any of them.
Like, so normal.
Yeah, so I kind of want Dante Martin for, like, a young, relatively normal member of the
group. I can see that. And Jesse did have, like, a little bit of a, like, worried energy a lot of
time. Yeah, definitely a worried energy.
I want to do it right. I want to be good at
she's
it.
She's a ballerina. She's working really hard.
Exactly. She's taking a lot of responsibility on her young shoulders.
Exactly. Yep. Aww.
And Dante is not a ballerina.
True.
I mean, the things that he's doing.
Oh, I thought you were just being like, we don't know what he does in his spare time. And I'm like, I guess you're right. We don't. That's a good point. Okay. And Mallory. I didn't put Mallory on here.
Oh, wow. I know. What happens to Mallory.
Well, it's actually the funny thing is I copied this from Wikipedia because I didn't feel like typing all the names out. So Mallory is potentially,
not on Wikipedia. That's crazy.
Okay, well, that would be insane.
I went with Alan Five Angels for Mallory, which it feels right, even though it's deranged. It feels right.
I think it's exactly correct.
I could also see a Brandon Cutler or a Peter Avalon being the Mallory, too, where it's like really out there into their own stuff. Peter Who's Avalon the, maybe would be good because he's a little more annoying.
Got a horse girl energy to her.
Yeah. Oh my God, that's right. Yeah. And then I didn't read any books with these two, so I don't know if you cast them.
I thought you made these people up.
No, they're from the
Abby's
later books.
From later books, and I had grown out of the books by then. Shannon Kilborn was the rich girl in Christie's Neighborhood who is
I don't know why. I guess she must eventually. I think they babysat her, and then she became a babysitter at some point. So that's why I'm just like, but it was kind of a really late stages thing. Abby Stevenson is like the goof. Like she wants to grow up and become a comedian or something. And she has a twin. So
she plays soccer too, I feel like.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to say that best friends are the Pike triplets?
Yes. That's right.
Absolutely correct.
Oh man.
Could not be more correct.
That
wow.
is right.
My mind's just exploded.
Oh wow.
And I felt like Joey Janela was Alan Grayson, the boy who
oh,
the
yes.
disgusting one with
oh,
the
my God,
on his eyes.
Absolutely right. I think this casting works in that this means that every time that Brandon Cutler hosts D&D, he's babysitting his brother's best friends, and they're driving him fucking crazy.
He's like, Mom and Dad will be home any minute. Can we just get this game?
I know. He's like, guys, I'm actually here, and I'm not your sister. I'm your babysitter, and you have to respect me as such. Oh. And they don't.
Well, she's 1 year older than them, so.
Oh, man. Well, you guys did a great job.
Thank you so much.
You
I worked really hard on it. I missed part of Dynamite because I was very involved.
I did.
And you did a really good job. You did way yeah. better than I did. You did very
no,
good
no,
job.
You both
did You
great,
did way better at Tumblr, so, you know, we've all got
we
our,
have
strengths.
Our strengths.
my girls trade back and forth. I did mean to do the casting, but I was working on the schedule, so I did not get to it.
No. You also work hard and do a great job. I think everyone on this podcast is doing a great job.
I need to hear it. Okay, does anyone have anything that they desperately want to say before we sign off?
I don't think so.
No?
I mean, I think we're good. We're all traveling to Chicago tomorrow to go to Rampage. It's today's Thursday. And so we're going to have some fun experiences to bring back to the pod next week.
Should we all sit together at All Out, but then not discuss anything? No, no, no. There's a part two of that sentence,
lady. Our tickets are next
lady,
to each other, so.
There's
like,
a
I
part
think it's
two.
Like first come, first serve.
She's going to run to the front and leave us behind.
There's a part two, you animals, which is that we do not share our reactions or
oh,
discuss the show
no.
in any way. So that
way that
we
won't be happening,
podcast.
No. That's not going to be happening.
I like that you think we could pull that off. Like, just be like, okay, save it for the podcast anytime anyone tries
absolutely
to talk
not.
About it afterwards.
It's all getting processed, and then you guys are going to get the after chum. So enjoy. Okay. Well, I've been Allie.
I've been Anne.
And I've been Leah.
And this is Tunnel Talk. Our show is produced by Marjorie Voinovich. Our theme is by Chris Corkin. You can find us on Twitter at Tunnel Talk Pod. Feel free to tell us what you thought of our Babysitter's Club castings. And via email at tunneltalkpod@gmail.com. That's if you want to say it with more characters. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you want. And come back again next week.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.